Well, I've been looking forward to our study in the book of Esther tonight. I told you that we were going to see some things there in the latter part of chapter 1 that almost would fit right in with our contemporary scene in the world today. There was, I suppose, what would come near being the EAR movement back then and the women's liberation movement, but it didn't work out too well. Didn't work out very well at all, as a matter of fact, as we're going to see in this lesson. We learned in the first part, verse 1 to 9, that King Ahasuerus of Persia had made a great feast, all of the great men in his 127 provinces. At the same time, his wife was entertaining the ladies in another part that was separate from where the men were. It may not sound like a very good thing to have to relate, but in that day, the kings and the princes, the chamberlains and the like, would all gather in the great banquet hall, usually of the palace. They would leave their wives at home and take their concubines, and would all get drunk and have a big time. And that's about what was going on here, if I had to make a conjecture. But anyway, his wife is not in the same part of the palace where the king is. And that will account for the fact that he'll have to send for in our lesson tonight. Beginning at the 10th verse, and really going all the way down to the end of the chapter there in verse 22, it tells how that the king divorced the queen because she refused to come when he sent for her. And that is essentially what this is about. I want us now to look at verse 10, where we find that the king's heart was merry with wine. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded Mehuman, Bistha, Hobona, Bigtha, Abagtha, Zethar, and Carcass, the seven chamberlains that served in the presence of Ahasuerus, the king. So about all that we're told in this was that it was near the end of this great feast of 180 days. And I suppose they were all feeling good by this time. Based on what we have read in verse 10, it is a certain fact that King Ahasuerus was well intoxicated by this time. He had no doubt had many goblets of wine as we have come near to the end of the feast. Now, I don't know what the conversation was around the banquet hall, but if I had to make a guess, they were all bragging about how beautiful various women were that they knew. At least it would seem from the context that's what the situation was. So I suppose during the time of all of this bragging about the most beautiful woman in all the kingdoms of Persia and Media, that the king probably stood up and said, "Well, I don't care how many beautiful women you tell me about, I want you to know that my queen looks better than all of the rest of them put together." So he probably made a big boast of some kind about like that. And so what does he do? He commissions these seven chamberlains to go and to tell the queen to come over and be there in the place where all of these drunken men are, as well as the king. So let's go on and read that 11th verse, because it ought to be considered with this. "To bring Vashti, the queen, before the king, with the crown royal, to show the people and the princes her beauty. For she was fair to look on." These seven chamberlains that are mentioned here were the eunuchs that kept the harem of the king. And they were very common in that day. Now, what the king has commanded is absolutely contrary to the custom of that day. It was not according to the custom of the Persian kings to allow their women to appear in these public banquets that were going on. Now, they didn't mind bringing their concubines, but they didn't ever bring their wives. That was the custom. And so he had ordered her to make an appearance there before something like 15,000 people that had gathered there in that banquet hall. And of course, I don't suppose she wanted to go, but he was very determined that she come. So what he did here was contrary to the custom of the kings of Persia. As a rule, they did not bring the queen in to be gazed on by the men of the kingdom. As a matter of fact, very few people ever saw the king or the queen. It was a distinct privilege even to see the face of the king, not to mention the face of the queen. And so it was contrary to custom, and it was unusual. But I suppose that he had run off at the mouth until he felt like that he had to prove his point, that she was indeed the most beautiful woman in all the kingdoms of Media and Persia. So he tells the seven chamberlains to go get her and to bring her in here to the great banquet hall. Now, I don't know exactly what he had in mind, but based on the information in Josephus, History of the Jewish People, he wanted her to come in before all of these men nude. The Bible doesn't say that, but the history books do. And if that were the case, I can easily understand why she was very reluctant even in that day to obey the wish of the king. And you're going to ask me a question after a while, and I'll answer it when I get there. You're going to want to know if she did right or wrong. Everybody asks that every time I preach on this. Well, the Bible doesn't say, and I won't be able to give you any concrete answer, but I will give you my opinion for whatever that may be worth based on the context. Now, here is a man that is drunk, and he wants his wife to come in before a company of drunken men and expose herself, that he may prove his point that she is perhaps the most beautiful and most sexy woman in all of Media and Persia. So the whole thing is a terrible thing when you think about it. This would be very unbecoming to a woman, but also be very unbecoming to a woman that was the king of all Persia. But nevertheless, this was the command of the king. And sometime in that day, to disobey the command of the king could result in death, even for the queen. So this woman was daring. That's what I want you to see. Well, the lady wasn't too inclined to want to obey her husband. Because look at verse 12. But the queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment by his chamberlains. So she not only now refused to obey the king, she refused to obey his seven chamberlains as well, because they brought the message. Therefore was the king very wroth, and his anger burned in him. Now somebody said, why did the woman not come? Somebody said, well, I suppose she didn't want to expose herself before these drunken men. That's very probable, I'd say, though the Bible does not give any detailed information at that point. There may be some other reasons, though, we hadn't thought about. It may be that she was busy with entertaining all these other ladies and felt like she really didn't have time to leave them to go over and see the king. I don't know. Maybe she didn't feel like that she would have looked very queenly had she gone over at that particular time, coming over unannounced like and going over there before all of those dignitaries. Maybe she hadn't powdered and painted as much as she thought she ought to. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But anyway, whatever the case may have been, she definitely said, I won't go. Doesn't make any difference if he did say, come, I won't go. So here's one clear-cut example of a woman that refused to obey her husband. Not only did she refuse to obey her husband, but as the queen of Persia, she refused to obey the king, which was far worse than the first that I mentioned. I don't know what the real reason was. She very certainly did not intend to go, and of that we can be sure. Well, anyway, I can imagine when the message gets back to the king and all these people out there, thousands of them looking on and probably some of them kind of grinning, you know, and whispering in one another's ear and said, yeah, we always thought the old boy was a little bit henpecked, you know, anyway. Now we got the goods on him. And I can just imagine in a big place like that, in the type situation you had, the whispering that would have been going on around the table as they would drink out of the golden goblets of wine. And so the king he's embarrassed. He's hurt. He's in a rage. And I suppose by this time he's sobered up a little bit, because he really didn't expect the queen to just absolutely refuse to come. So he's probably, first of all, embarrassed before all of these princes and others that are present there. And I suppose he must have almost beat himself up on the chest. Said, "A fine fellow I am. I rule 127 provinces, and I can't even get my wife to do what I tell her to." Well, I suppose it did seem to be a little embarrassing, come to think about it. Man ruling all the way from Ethiopia to India, ruling over thousands of people, whole states of people, and he couldn't even get his own wife to do what he said. Well, you guessed it, he was mad. He was very mad at this point. He was so mad until he said, "I'll just get rid of her," and he did. But he wasn't so mad that he did something contrary to the law. And so I have to respect the king here, because while he's angry and he'd like to get rid of that woman, he don't know what he's going to do with her. He's very tolerant, and he says, "I want you chief of states to come around and tell me what I'm going to do about this. I don't want to do anything contrary to the law, but whatever the law will permit me to do as a king, then I want to do it." And of course, now you're still going to ask that question that I mentioned a while ago. Did the woman do right or wrong? Should a woman always obey her husband no matter what? Well, you know from what I taught in the book of Ephesians that I did put some limitations on that obedience of the wife to the husband. And that obedience is conditioned on whether or not it would be in harmony with the will of God. Nobody is obligated by any instructions from man to go contrary to the will of God. So my answer is this way. It was wrong for him to tell her to come in the manner that he did. But in another sense, it was also wrong for her to disobey her husband. But I would say that the woman was more right in this case than was the man, because what he requested was pretty far-fetched even for that day, and would be a terrible thing to contemplate in our modern day society. So anyway, the king, he said, "Well, I'm embarrassed, I'm mad. What are we going to do now? We're in a mess. We got all these princes and chamberlains and all these dignitaries here, and I've been made a fool out of before all the people. What am I going to do now?" Well, he calls in the fellows that give him counsel, and he wants to know what he ought to do. So let's look there, beginning at verse 13 to 15. And he wants the advice of all of his counselors. He wants the chief of states, as it were, to tell him what to do. "Then the king said to the wise men," and that's the astrologers, the stargazers, almost like physicians and scientists in our day. That's what they were in that time. Primarily were counselors to the king, very common for the kings in that day not to do anything unless the astrologers told him that all would go well with him if he did. "So the wise men which knew the times," I suppose that means they were skilled politicians and they knew how the people would react. That's just putting it in modern terms. They knew the times. "For it was the king's manner toward all that knew law and judgment. And the next unto him was Karshina." That would mean that he was second in power to the king. I assume the way that reads there. The right-hand man of the king, or whatever you want to call him. "Shethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meris, Marsena, and Memucan, the seven princes of Persia and Media, which saw the king's face, and which sat the first in the kingdom." So these were the men high up in the cabinet, as we'd call them. "What shall we do unto Queen Vashti according to the law? Because she hath not performed the commandment of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlains." So now there were twofold situation here. You had disobedience to the king, number one, disobedience to the seven high chamberlains of the king, number two. So there's really a twofold charge there to be brought against her. I suppose that we'd call these men the skilled politicians, the great historians, the men who knew how the pulse of the common people throughout all these provinces would beat as to this event that had taken place. And so here are men of great authority. They're next to the king. And incidentally, one of these men, according to history, was the uncle of Xerxes the king. So I guess it helped to have your uncle there, you know, at a time like that to tell you what to do. And so that's what he had. He had his uncle there to give him some advice. Talks about the seven princes of Persia and Media. Ordinarily, that would be the families that the new queen would be chosen from. So that would be one of the reasons why that Xerxes would consult these individuals, because probably one of their daughters, under normal circumstance, would have ended up being the next queen. However, a Jew ended up being the next queen, as we're going to see. But that was a little bit out of the normal path of that time. There's one thing I will say for the king. Although he's merry with wine, he still does not want to violate the law. And really, he must have had quite a bit of respect for the law, because he did not even believe that his own wife, the queen, ought to be exempt from the law. There was one thing that I thought was great about the Watergate scandal this country had. We saw even that our president was not beyond the law. That there is no man in this country beyond the laws that have been enacted by this republic. So while you may think of all the bad about Watergate, remember that's one of the good things that happened. It proved that no man is above and beyond the law of the land. Well, that's exactly the way the king of Persia felt here. He said, if my wife has violated the law of the land, then she must pay the consequence according to the law. Somebody said, well, he must have kind of enjoyed seeing the law carried out. No, according to history, just the reverse. As a matter of fact, he thought very highly of Queen Vashti. And had it not been that he was so embarrassed before all of these great dignitaries, he probably would have excused it and ignored it. But he could not, for political reasons, do so. As a matter of fact, the counselors tell him that it'll create a revolt throughout all the empire if he doesn't do something about it. And that's what their advice essentially is there. But you know, there's something else I see here. One wrong act led to some other wrong acts. The king was wrong in telling the queen to come in the manner that he did. She was wrong, in a sense, for refusing to obey her husband. And then it seemed to be a rather stern measure to divorce her for the reason that he did. So what I'm pointing out is that one wrong seldom stands alone. It usually necessitates some other wrongs to go with it. And that's what we see in this lesson. Well, one of the leading counselors tells him how to solve all his problems here, though I'm not so sure that he enjoyed the answer that he heard, because he really didn't want to put away his wife. He loved her very much, and you'll find over there in the next chapter that he still remembered her. So he evidently never forgot her, though he probably never saw her again. Now let's look at verse 16 and go down to about verse 20, and we're going to see the counsel that he was given. And Memucan answered before the king and the princes, Vashti the queen hath not done wrong to the king only, but also to all the princes and to all the people that are in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus. For this deed of the queen shall come abroad unto all women, so that they shall despise their husbands in their eyes. When it shall be reported, the king Ahasuerus commanded Vashti the queen to be brought in before him, but she came not. Likewise shall the ladies of Persia and Media say this day unto all the king's princes, which have heard of the deed of the queen, thus shall there arise too much contempt and wrath. And so here is the counsel, and he goes on still in verse 19. If it please the king, and the king did have the right even to overturn the law if he wanted to. But in this particular case, with all these politicians there, it would have been very unwise, and he knew it. If it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the law of the Persians and of the Medes, that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. And when the king's decree, which he shall make, shall be published throughout all his empire, for it is great, all the wives shall give to their husbands honor, both to great and small. So here's a man that's going to be called upon to divorce his wife that he loves dearly, not for any scriptural ground of divorce, but merely because she refused to come in and expose herself before the eyes of some drunken leaders in the government. So that's the advice that is being given. However, I must say that this man was evidently considering the ultimate outcome of the news that would spread throughout the kingdom. And he said, what's going to happen if this is allowed on the part of the queen? Then all of the princes' wives will react the same way, and the common people, and we're going to have a revolt on our hands throughout all of this 127 provinces. And he more or less is saying that we can't let this go unchallenged. We can't let it just drag out. We got to do something about it. And so you're going to have to divorce this woman. She has proven herself to be unworthy as a queen, and you'll have to give her royal estate and the crown to somebody that will be in obedience to the king. And so essentially that's what she said. It is true that the Bible teaches that a woman is to reverence and obey her husband. But again, I point out that there are limitations on that. He is not to ask her to do anything that is in contradiction to the law of God or against the express will of God, because we ought to always obey God rather than men. And that certainly would be true in that case as well as some other cases. But it would seem that what the man is saying here is we're going to have to make a public example out of this woman. If we let this thing go, then the judgment of all the kingdom will be in disarray. And nobody will pay any attention to the law of the land. And I would sometime that maybe our government could realize some of that, because if we do not carry out the laws of the land, then they will be violated. And nobody will respect laws that are not enforced and that are not carried out according to the letter. Because the law is made for everyone. Not even a queen was exempted from the law of Media and Persia. One of the remarkable things about the law, the Medes and the Persians, was that it couldn't be altered or changed. In other words, when he divorced, that woman is permanent. And if he said that a man was going to die, there was no reversal of that judgment that was meted out. So that judgment was very permanent when once it was given for. So they're going to make a public example out of her, and they feel like that's the way that it's got to be. And the man more or less said, if you don't do that, said all the women are going to despise their husbands. They're all going to disobey him, and said our homes are going to be in ruin and we're going to have a mess. So I suppose you would say that this man said we're going to have to stop the ERA and we're going to have to do away with this women's liberation movement or we're all going to be in trouble. That's probably what he'd have said if he'd lived today and they had something like we have back in that day, and that is what the man told the king. Well, the king had to carry out the law and he had to divorce his wife for this act of disobedience. And that's what we're going to see in verse 21 and 22. And the saying pleased the king and the princes. I suppose in the case of the king, he thought at least it was justice, though it may not have been what he wanted to do. And the saying pleased the king and the princes, and the king did according to the word of Memucan. For he sent letters into all the king's provinces, into every province according to the writing thereof, and to every people after their language, that every man should bear rule in his own house. That's a pretty good mandate to send forth. It's certainly based on the Bible in the New Testament and the Old. That every man should bear rule in his own house, and that it should be published according to the language of every people. Ruling over this vast kingdom of 127 provinces, There was no doubt many different languages throughout that kingdom, and it was necessary that it be written in the language of the common people in all these provinces, so all of them would know what the king had done and what the law had said. I think it is a very practical point, and it's certainly one that needs to abide in our time, that every man should bear rule in his own house. Now, think about it for a few moments. Do you really think it'd be right for the woman to run the household? Even nature itself would teach against that idea. And the Bible is very clear that man is to be the head of the home. But bear in mind, with that position of authority also comes great responsibility. That means that God holds the man that rules in the home responsible for his entire household. So now maybe you don't want the job after you've heard about it, reckon? Kids, wife, anybody else that's in your household, even servants like in that day, and maybe other members of the family, you're responsible for your household. Why? Because every man is to bear rule in his own house. So in a sense, he is to do exactly what's said there. There are a few practical points that I must bring out in this lesson, and they may seem at first to be strained, but I don't really believe they are. First of all, how many times has history repeated itself? How many marriages have broken up just because of something like what we've read in this lesson? Maybe it was because somebody had got drunk that a marriage was severed. At least drunkenness played the primary role in this event that we've studied tonight. Maybe at other times it was a fit of passion. Time of anger, like the king got angry and wroth. And how many marriages have been severed because maybe the husband and the wife had a fuss and a fight, and it ended up and it all was severed because they got angry with one another. And maybe it was strong words, such as probably was uttered here by the king when he heard what his wife had said. So many marriages have been severed by drunkenness, by a fit of passion, and by even some thoughtless words. And I shall go a step further. They have been marriages that have been severed when really the husband and the wife love one another and would almost would that it hadn't worked out like it did. I've talked to some that way. I know what I'm saying. That's the way it was here. The king really didn't want to put away his wife. He had to do it for political reasons. Oh, he is mad for a while, but deep down in his heart, he didn't want to put her away. But the law of the land almost demanded that he do it. And so he carried out the law. But he never forgot Vashti. As a matter of fact, she probably was a woman that he loved the rest of his life, if I had to guess from what I read, though he evidently thought very highly of Esther, that we'll read about later in the book. So here we see how that history has many times repeated itself. Many of these things have contributed to the breaking up of homes. Now let's look at it from another standpoint. Let's try for a few moments to make Jesus Christ to be compared to King Ahasuerus, and then to make Vashti to be a born-again believer. I don't believe I'm putting an awful strain on this, because there are times that the King of Kings commands us to appear before Him in the beauty of holiness. And you know, a lot of times we're feasting on the things of the world and we refuse to come. You ever thought about that? Even though the great King has given the command for us to appear and to render service unto Him, we refuse to come. We won't obey His commandment. And you know what happened in the case of Vashti? She was in a state of rebellion to her husband, and she lost the fellowship of the king. And many, many times when we're engaged in worldly feast and we do not obey the king's commandments, that's what happens to us. We lose the fellowship of the king. More than that, she lost her crown. She lost her crown. You know, the Bible warns us that we can lose our crown, too. Listen to the book of Revelation, chapter 3, and verse 11. Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. I don't know all the details, but I can imagine that Vashti spent many, many more years of her life in shame and bitterness of soul because she had lost the crown. And I tell you, many of us at the judgment seat of Christ will experience bitterness of soul when we realize that we've lost the crown we could have won had we obeyed the King's commandment. I've told this story before, and I'm going to tell it again. One time there was a man who was a distributor of tracts. He often would pass out tracts. And so he would pass out tracts on the street corner. He would pass out tracts here and there and everywhere. But finally he got tired of it. He said, "It don't seem like anything's coming out of it." He said, "No good's coming out of it. I don't know anybody's been saved. I believe I'll just quit." And so he did. He didn't pass out any more tracts. Many years went by. He was an old man going down the street one day, and a fellow gave him a tract. And the young fellow that passed out the tract looked at him for quite a while and said, "Don't you remember me?" And he said, "No, I don't believe I do." He said, "You gave me a tract some years ago, and I read it and said I was saved." He said, "I've been passing out tracts ever since." The old man dropped his head, and tears came to his eyes. He said, "Young man," said, "you've taken my crown. You've taken my crown." So you see, the idea is there that if God calls us to do a job and we don't do it, he'll get somebody else. And he'll get the crown and we'll lose the crown, just like this woman lost the crown by disobeying the King. So a little practical points there. Maybe we'll think about that sometime. I think it's beneficial to see it from that standpoint. That concludes our lesson for tonight.